Welcome to the Big Three podcast. This podcast answers three big questions raised from Sunday's sermon by the congregation of Guymere Baptist. The Big Three Pod seeks to discuss these questions, explore issues, unpack theology, provide further information and explanation to help your faith grow. You can listen to the original sermon on your favourite podcast platform or at guymerebaptist.org.au. Our prayer is that this pod helps you as you follow Jesus.
Well, welcome back to the Big Three. My name is Mark Rader. I'm the senior pastor at Guymere Baptist Church, the source of the three questions the congregations are at least, and I'm going to have a crack at trying to answer some of them as we continue our series in Sabbath, Learning to Rest with Jesus. On Sunday, I had a look at Leviticus 25 and both the Sabbath year and then the year of Jubilee, both of which are based on the Sabbath rhythm. So the one in seven weekly rest would lead ultimately to a one in 7 years rest for the land. And then ultimately, after seven Sabbath years, the 50th year was to be a year of Jubilee. Ended up kind of connecting the kind of the corporate elements of this with the language that Jesus uses in Luke chapter 4 when he cites Isaiah 61 and says that his ministry is to set the oppressed free and to set captives free and to give sight to the blind and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And that while he doesn't use the term Sabbath year, he doesn't use the term Jubilee, the actions that are associated with that proclamation seem to make it relatively clear that there's something very kingdom about Jubilee and about Sabbath years, and therefore also about Sabbath itself when we consider what it means to follow Jesus. It's continued to be a really challenging series for me personally. The more I delve into this, the more I try to gather my thoughts and synthesize some of the reading that I've done, the more convinced I am that Sabbath is something that I have neglected, and that I think many churches in the evangelical portion of the church have also neglected. And there are lots of reasons for that, and all that kind of thing. But that we need to figure something out, really, to recapture, and really to be faithful in keeping the Sabbath and observing the Sabbath in some way, shape, or form. And what that looks like, I'm still not entirely certain. But I'm enjoying the process of as my prayer has been of the Holy Spirit kind of breaking up the spirit of my heart, and I hope yours as well, of just kind of preparing the ground for some Sabbath practices that might bear some fruit for us as individuals and as a community of faith and into our world as well. The three questions that we'll be looking at today are these. What does observing a Sabbath year look like in our modern life? Should we dedicate an entire metaphorical year to trust God and giving out, or is it different? Which is a great question about, if the Sabbath, day has some sort of applicability for us today, then does the Sabbath year also, let alone the year of Jubilee? So that's a great question for us to talk a little bit about kingdom in particular. Secondly, practically speaking, if Israel had kept the Sabbath year, would they have prepared for it or blindly trusted God to provide? Wouldn't prepping undermine trust? Again, it's a really insightful way for us to think about the practice of Sabbath as a practice of trust, and yet also the intentionality that is required to practice trust, and how much preparation can we do before we stop trusting because we've prepared so well, and that which is great. So that's a good question for us to grapple with. And thirdly, if generous actions are permissible, how can we do them while still resting? So the idea that the principles of generosity, of salvation, of restoration, of freedom from oppression, if those things are permissible, then how do we practice those in our Sabbath without filling our Sabbath with more work is the essence, I think, of that question. So those are great questions for us to start to continue to think about Sabbath and what it looks like for us as a community of faith to practice that more effectively. Thank you. So the first question, again, what does observing a Sabbath year look like in our modern life? Should we dedicate an entire metaphorical year to trust God and giving out, or is it different? One of the observations that a couple of authors made, at least the authors that I read, made about our society is that there are a few professions in particular, academic professions, for instance, where the idea of a sabbatical, right, a period of time that is set aside for different kinds of work, different sorts of activity for a rest, are not just permissible, but almost expected and are a part of the rhythm. And so we do have a couple of, I suppose, places where we have some examples of what a Sabbath year might look like. Now, I think economic realities make it pretty difficult for us to consider, you know, not working for a year. I don't know very many people who would be able to say, yep, I'll just stop working for a year and, you know, my wife will stop working for a year and we'll be fine. Economically speaking, that sounds pretty tricky. And to be fair, the Sabbath year was a year of rest for the land, but wasn't necessarily a year of rest for the people. Now, if the land rests and I'm a farmer, there's limits to then what I can do, right? There may be equipment to fix. There may be fences to repair. There may be, you know, barns to build. Like, who knows what other work there was to do. But the Sabbath year was not necessarily a year of rest. It was a year of rest for the land, which reminds us again of the creation ordinance, that the rest of God was, while I suppose you could say it's mostly for humanity, right, for their benefit and their purpose, it's not just for humanity. So I think in terms of our observance of a seventh year, I'm not really sure how we would do that from a practical perspective. You know, perhaps if you are in a field where sabbaticals are a thing, that might be something that you practice a little bit more faithfully. You know, if you've got that opportunity, many people don't, and so that doesn't seem to really be an option. I think the metaphorical component, right, of observing a Sabbath year, I think is, I think has some merit to it. But I reckon that in terms of how I'd answer this question, ultimately, I think it has to do with that highest level of the kingdom. So a little bit of background: when you're reading Old Testament narratives in particular, and it's true of New Testament narratives as well, but Old Testament narratives in particular, there are three levels to the story. There's the individual level of the story. So we read a passage and it talks about the Sabbath year and giving the land the rest and all that kind of stuff. And we're kind of, right, off we go. Great. Then we have to ask the question, how does that individual narrative, that story, how does that fit within the story of Israel? All right. So we kind of go from the ground to the 10,000 foot level, right? Where we start asking, okay, the Sabbath year was a reflection of the relationship that Israel had with God. And that relationship was one of trust. It was one of God's provision. It was one of God's love for his people and a desire for them to be faithful. And so we start thinking about how the Sabbath year fits into that bigger picture of God's relationship with Israel. That's where we might go back to their rescue from Egypt or back to the creation account to some degree to kind of talk about the story of Israel. And then there's the kind of the highest level, which is kind of the story of the Bible, which is, that's probably where we'd actually go back to creation, right? Where we try to pull the whole story together. So we're kind of at the 50,000 foot level now. And we start thinking about something like the Sabbath year, instead of being on the ground and what it would look like, or even within the story of Israel, what it looks like in the story of God. And that allows us then to think about some of the principles that we find in that ultimate story, right? It takes us back to creation. It causes us to reflect again on the joy and celebration that is meant to be a part of our relationship with God. And of course, it allows us to talk about the Sabbath year in relationship to the ministry of Jesus. So I think that one of the, and this will come up again in one of the other questions, but I think one of the principles then of the Sabbath year is that the Sabbath year is meant to permeate our whole life, right? As followers of Jesus, like if Jesus's entire ministry was about the year of Jubilee, whether it was the 50th year or not, right? His ministry lasted for 3 years, so we don't know. We doubt that there was a Sabbath year or a Jubilee in that period of time. I think one of the gospel authors would have mentioned it. It would have been a wonderful kind of alignment, right? So it wasn't actually a Sabbath year. It wasn't actually a Jubilee when he ministered, but nonetheless, he saw his ministry as essentially demonstrating the principles and the character of the Jubilee in everything that he did. And that really, to some degree, while we might want to implement a once in seven weekly rhythm, to some degree, the rest of our lives, the other 6 days and every single week, ought to reflect some of those really big principles and the character of that kind of a joyful celebration of freedom and restoration and generosity and release and relief and all those things, the things that Jesus came to do. So I reckon ultimately it's not so much for us about practicing the Sabbath year as individuals, as much as it is about trying to pick up some of the kingdom language. Having said that, one of the authors that I read in particular, and I can't remember which one, I've listed the four books that I've read in the Life Group resources. If you go to our website under resources and Life Group resources, you'll find the Sabbath Life Group guides. And I've listed the books there. So if you wanted to have a look at them, but he's ended up doing a bunch of work, kind of particularly in environmental spaces and in relationship to the fact that our consumeristic and capitalistic society runs the land 7 days a week, right? 24/7. Like there's no rest. Like he talked about like dairy cows and just the like, or chickens, like, you know, like the whole conversation around, you know, battery chickens or free range chickens. Part of that is about rest. You know, if they're just sitting in a cage producing eggs, that's an enslavement of sort for the creation. And that's not how God has designed the world. So to some degree, like some of the decisions that we might make around something as simple as choosing free range eggs, and the choice of choosing free range eggs might not have anything to do with animal cruelty so much as it does with the idea that there's just no rest for the creation, and that it is in itself a form of cruelty, but that gives us enough reason to say, in order to provide some kind of Sabbath, you know, for the created order, that we're going to be a little bit more careful about the food that we buy. So if that makes some sense. So there's a couple of levels at which that works, but it's a great question. And, you know, if you're out there listening to the answer to your question or to the question that you and a few people kind of came up with, I hope that kind of captures some of it. It's, man, there's lots to unpack in that space. But I'll leave it there for now, and we'll move on to our next question. So the second question relates to the issue of trust, which is a key theme of the Sabbath, itself, particularly in Exodus chapter 16, where the first kind of Sabbath is observed in relationship not to the fourth commandment, but to the provision of manna. And so, you know, the people of Israel were to collect just enough every single day, or at least for 5 days. On the sixth day, collect twice as much. If they had any left over on any of the other 5 days, any of the other days, it would rot overnight. But on the seventh day, on the sixth day, it would last for two. God provided for them. They were to trust him for their daily bread. That idea is actually a fairly significant one, I think, to be reflected then in the creation, right? To be able to trust that the world won't stop if we stop, right? That things will still get done, that we'll be okay if we just don't, which is, I think, a big action of trust. But the question is this. Practically speaking, if Israel had kept the Sabbath year, would they have prepared for it or blindly trusted God to provide? Wouldn't prepping undermine trust? And I think, you know, that's a great insight. You know, if I'm going to be trusting God, but then I do all sorts of preparation, at what point does my preparation become the thing that I trust in rather than in God? And I think there's two edges to this. I think that the people of Israel were to trust God, and they were to demonstrate that trust in a very real way by stopping weekly. And then, you know, when it comes to the Sabbath year, allowing the land to rest as well. And even more so when they got to the Jubilee. But they were also, and again, this comes out in the reading, that nobody accidentally keeps the Sabbath, right? So it's not something that you can just kind of wander through your week and then kind of go, oh, it's, you know, Saturday or Sunday or whatever day that you choose and say, okay, so it's Sabbath, here we go, without doing some thinking. So, you know, one of the things that, one of the practices that seems very, very common amongst those who practice Sabbath is, you know, cleaning the house the night before, right? So the day before, or the afternoon of you know, the Sabbath, depending on when you start that, is just doing a little bit of cleaning to make sure that the house is tidy and that you don't have to do any of that the next day. It might include some of the meal prep so that you don't have to cook as much the next day. You can just reheat something or, you know, add one thing to it and it's done, or whatever the case might be. That there are some, there's some preparation that needs to go into being able to rest, right? There's some preparation that needs to go into that in order to carve out the time and be deliberate and intentional. And intentionality and preparation are similar but slightly different. I think, you know, the Israelites, if they had set themselves and set their hearts to observe the Sabbath year, they would have done some preparation, right? There would have been some sense of saying that we're going to prepare. We're going to keep a little bit of our harvest in the first year back, and we're going to keep a little bit of the second year, and we're just not necessarily to cover entirely the, you know, the year and a half that they would have to wait between harvests, but in order to be prepared. I don't believe that the trust that we're being called to in Scripture is necessarily blind trust, right? That whole idea of, I don't think about it, I don't prepare for it. I don't do any kind of pre-work. I just kind of blindly launch in. That's not always what God calls us to. I think most of the time there's a real sense that our trust is to be grounded in our lives. And so I think that the Israelites would have prepared a little bit. And having said that, you know, I think it's kind of easy for us to think about, you know, buying a couple of extra cans of beans every week and storing them away downstairs in some sort of pantry, right? Like some doomsday prepper, right? And just kind of collecting a little bit of food every couple of weeks or months or whatever the case might be, so that we had a year's supply of food. I think we can imagine doing that because of the excess in which the kind of the world that we live in. The people of Israel, there would have been very, very, very few people who would have been able to store up a year's worth of food and just kind of hold on to it. And those who did, you know, would have been very wealthy, and they would have been the ones who would have been setting people free and then theoretically also possibly being part of God's provision for those around them. Like, it was a year of generosity and of trust. And so I think that there would have been some preparation done. There almost would have had to have been for something like that to work. You think about, you know, economically, and yeah, just think about the farmers markets. You know, for a year, all of a sudden there would be no farmers markets because, well, nothing got planted this year, and we're not to harvest anything. So the farmers market is off. So where did the people in the city buy their food? And like, it just, the practicalities of it kind of blow the mind. But I believe that we're called to trust God, and then to work with Him to prepare along the way, in order that we are ready to trust Him. Right? Again, this is, I think, where the weekly rhythm of the Sabbath becomes really important, because the weekly rhythm of the Sabbath becomes the groundwork for our trust for like a seventh year, right? There's a sense that we're continuing weekly to return to God's goodness, His generosity, His purposes, His plans, His salvation, the joy that we have in Him, the celebration that we have because of Him, and that would have permeated their lives to the point where the seventh year, I think the preparation for it, there would have been some elements that would make clear where their trust lies. Right. And I think, you know, if we start trusting in our superannuation to like that, that's where our security lies. Once I get X number of dollars, then I'm good. I think we need to be careful of where we place our trust, and to what degree are we, you know, if God doesn't come through, we got that covered. That's probably a dangerous place to be, which doesn't mean that we have to kind of throw caution to the wind and just kind of say, hey, God will provide for me in my future. Like, we want to prepare, but we want to be people who continually test our hearts to see where our trust actually lies. Does our trust lie with God? And I think that's a pretty personal question. I'm not sure that there are objective measures that you could undergo where you'd say, yep, you do trust God, or no, you don't. I think it's quite subjective, but I think we need to be people who, in part through the regular observance of the Sabbath, practice trusting God in those small ways so that we are able to trust Him in some of the bigger ways. I think that's probably how I'd have a crack at answering that question at this point in time, but it's a great one to think through. At what point does our preparation undermine or stop us from trusting in God? Lots more to say about that, I reckon, and one for us to continue to think about. The last question is if generous actions are permissible on the Sabbath, how can we do them while still resting? So this came out of, Jesus' declaration that his ministry was basically to be shaped by Jubilee, by Sabbath year, and then therefore kind of grounded in this idea of Sabbath itself. And I made the comment then that there's nothing quite so kingdom as observing the Sabbath, right? There's something about observing the Sabbath that reflects what Jesus is actually on about, which opens the door to Sabbath being more than just sitting in a chair reading the Bible or staring at the wall or trying to be restful, right? It invites us to consider, I think, the corporate elements of Sabbath. You know, and I think it is worth noting that, you know, for the Jews and for Christians, when the Sabbath was observed in some way, shape, or form, that's been a day when they gather for corporate worship, right? So on the Sabbath, it was permissible to go to synagogue, right? To walk to synagogue and to participate in all that took place there, to reflect and to sing and to pray, to return home. So there was this corporate element, right? A kind of a group effort that included doing some things, right? I can imagine that there would have been, and again, in the books that I've been reading, there's some sense that, you know, getting out in creation is a good thing, but so is having people over for dinner. Now, maybe it's a simple meal, one that doesn't require a great deal of preparation or has been prepared the day before, but having people around, spending time with friends or spending time with people who might otherwise be alone. These sorts of activities, I think, can be quite restful, right? Again, I don't want to become legalistic and say, you know, you've got to do seven things because that becomes unrestful, but there's scope for that. I think that Again, as I said earlier, I think one of the places that the principles of Sabbath in terms of generosity, restoration, freedom, those sorts of things, I think one of the places that they show up is not necessarily on the activities of the Sabbath day that we choose, but instead in the other 6 days. There's a sense that the activity or the rest, it's probably a better way to say it, the rest of the Sabbath spills over into the rest of our week. You know, maybe the Sabbath becomes an opportunity for us to consider in the week ahead, how can we serve someone? Is there a way in which we can be part of setting someone or something free? Is there some work of restoration that we can be engaged in that would reflect the kingdom principles that we believe are associated with Sabbath in our daily lives? So I think that we have to be very careful not to fill our Sabbath day of rest with things to do, right? While at the same time, reflecting on some possibilities. Again, one of the authors that I read, she has people around for dinner or lunch quite frequently. She writes letters to people as something that she finds restful, but as a way to encourage and thank and express gratitude and whatever else it might be. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that we can do that I think there's all sorts of things that we can do that can reflect some of those principles while not filling our days with activity. Now, again, I think that the questions around, you know, what can we do on Sabbath will need to be answered quite individually. I mentioned this last week. I think that there are certain things that would be, that would feel like work to us. And therefore, I think we probably want to avoid doing those on whatever Sabbath day that we choose. But we do, I think, want to be considering that this is more than just a day of rest. And I think that's the key piece, right? Like it's a day of rest. It's a day to focus on God. But it's also an opportunity to reflect on God's purposes in the world and our place within them. And that should, I think, spill out into the rest of our weeks, right? Like it should be that our weekly pause, our weekly reminder of what God is on about and what he's invited us to be on about, that ought to shape the rest of our week. And I think this is part of the power of Sabbath. Again, the books that I've read, the consensus is that Sabbath changes the rest of your week. a number of them cite, I think it was a Jewish scholar, who talks about, you know, that that the rest of our week becomes 3 days of looking back at Sabbath and the 3 days of looking forward to Sabbath, right? We remember what we did, and then we look forward to what we will do, or we look back to how we rested, and then we will look forward to how we will rest. But that the rest of the week then kind of gets permeated by those principles. And so if there is some part of our Sabbath practice that allows us to consider, that encourages us to consider our purpose as God's people, I think that could radically change the way the rest of our week looks. And to some degree, this is why, you know, gathering together on Sunday makes Sunday a fairly obvious kind of decision for a Sabbath. And I think for lots of people, that might be one of the better days to choose, not wanting to be legalistic or jump ahead of the process. But you can imagine that there's something about connecting with other people and being reminded about who we are and whose we are and what it is that the one we follow is on about, right? We follow Jesus. We want to love Jesus in our actions. And part of our love for Jesus is reflected in wanting his projects to succeed, right? You got kids or siblings or close friends that you love. You want them to succeed. You want to do what you can to help them succeed. To some degree, we want to do everything we can to help Jesus succeed, right? Now, you know, of course, the reality is that he's going to be able to do it on his own, I suppose, but he's invited us in, and therefore that's part of our role. So reflecting on our participation, even if we're not doing any of that on a Sabbath, I think would be really helpful to cause those principles of Jubilee and Sabbath to spill over into the rest of our lives. End of the questions. I hope it's been helpful. Again, I really enjoy the opportunity to reflect more deeply on some specific components of a sermon. You know, there's limits to what you can say, in 25 minutes or so, on a Sunday morning. And so there's opportunities, I think, to really go deep. So thank you to those of you who have been asking these questions. Hope that it continues to challenge you as followers of Jesus. We've got a couple more weeks before we kind of we'll try to figure out what's next for us as individuals and as a community of faith, and looking forward to some of that process as well. Well, hopefully you can join us on Sunday as we continue to look at Sabbath, whether you join us on site or online, hope to have you join me again next week for the Big Three. Until then, God bless.
Thanks for joining us at the GBC Big Three podcast. We trust you found this inspiring, encouraging, challenging, but ultimately helpful to enable you to follow Jesus. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can also listen to the We Are The Church podcast, a discussion pod with real stories from real people at Guymere Baptist as they share their experiences of faith and discipleship in action. If you've enjoyed this pod, why don't you rate and review it? This way others can discover the podcast too.